There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Hey, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you are, what time it is. This is the better-looking Coach Dave Dobbenmeyer sitting in for that ugly guy, Rob Pugh. Rob's, as you can tell, probably away for tonight. In fact, over the next couple weeks, I'm going to be popping in here a time or two to help Rob out. I'm going to say this before I – two things. Let me stop right now. Listen, folks, right now, call somebody, text somebody, email somebody, and tell them to tune in to WCN.TV, Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers is going to you're going to hear tonight what really, really happened in Washington D.C. How Stuart Rhodes was set up, how Oath Keepers were set up, and I'm going to just take a couple minutes before we get Stuart in here. You call somebody, you text somebody, and you tell them to tune in, because the lies that have been told about what happened on that January 6th is unbelievable. So Stuart's going to be right here with us in just a second. And I want to just say a thanks to my buddy Rob Pugh, because he's the most workingest guy. I don't even know if that's a word, workingest guy. And he's about as unselfish a guy that I know. And he's always willing to give somebody a platform or jump in or do whatever it is he can do. And man, oh man, no, he's a little bit anal. For those of you who don't really know it, Rob, he's man, an A is an A and a B is a B with Rob. And I don't always fly that way, right? I'm a little bit more spontaneous, I think. But I just thank Rob for everything that he does. Probably the last newspaper of this kind that people can actually pick up a newspaper and read it. There's nothing like it. And you can really help Rob out becoming a subscriber to the news and having it mailed right to your house, which we do here. I live in outside of Columbus, Ohio, and I get it every month. And I would suggest that you do that. Again, just even financially to help Rob out to keep this thing up and running. So some of you like me, maybe some of you don't like me. It's all right. I am who I am, and I'm honored to sit in for Rob here tonight. And really humbled. I mean that honestly. I used to watch, you guys all heard of Oath Keepers. And I'd known Stuart Rhodes from a distance. I didn't really know him. I met him, golly, I don't know, 8 years, I don't know how long ago, long time ago, and at an event down in Dallas, Texas, a Hear the Watchman event that Mike Kerr had put on, Mike and Jeannie. And I met Stuart down there and struck up a relationship with him. And I mean, we weren't best of buddies, but you know, I could call Stuart and he could call me, and we had a relationship going on. And then when that whole thing broke loose on January 6th, and of course, I don't know how many of you know this, I took a bunch of people to January 6th as well. Washington, D.C. on that day. I had maybe 50, 75, maybe even 100 people who'd gone there. And I want you to know this, friends. No matter what they've told you, the story of J6 was a complete and total lie and setup. I'm just telling you, I was there. I saw the whole thing. My wife and I, my precious wife, we actually made it. We actually made it to the top steps of the Capitol building. And we saw the windows getting busted, and we saw the cops waving people in. We were there. We saw it. And, you know, it's amazing the number of people that I run into when I start talking about J6, and they still think it was an armed insurrection. And if it was an armed insurrection, it would be the first one in history where not one armed person was charged with carrying a weapon that day. I don't believe anybody was. The only armed people were the Capitol Police, and of course the guy who shot and killed my brain went dead. We know. I'm sorry, I can't think of her name. Doesn't matter. Shot and killed her. The only armed one there. And I believe this, and Stuart's going to jump into this here, I'm sure, as well. I believe, folks, that not only was the J6 a setup, a psyop, an inside job, call it whatever you want to. I think two things that happened afterwards was that they did everything they could to ruin the brand of Oath Keepers. Everything they could do to turn those guys into insurrectionists, do whatever you want to. Because Stuart had an unbelievable organization going there, and those guys were peaceful, and they came and they would serve as escorts. I mean, they just Oath Keepers was something. And then Enrique Tarrio, who had Proud Boys, they were the exact same thing. And of course, both of those guys, Stuart and Enrique, both did time in prison, if you can believe that, for really not having done anything on January 6th. So I'll shut up here for a minute, and I'm honored, really, really I'm honored that Stuart would come on and join us here tonight and tell us from his perspective what really happened on January 6th. Because again, folks, I was there. I saw firsthand what was going on. My wife and I could have literally walked right in the door as the Capitol Police or whoever it was opened the door and stood there and waved you in if you wanted to go in. And that was the greatest setup that was something. And you know, something else, I don't know how many of you know this, Stuart will tell us here in a second. Of all the pardons and everything that took place, Stuart Rhodes still has not received a pardon. We need to bring pressure on President Trump or whoever that might be. And Stuart will get into all of it. This is an honorable, this guy is a Ivy League, I was going to say Harvard, but I know it's not right. Ivy League trained attorney. He ain't no dummy. He's a vet. He laid his life on the line. And to think that he would come and lead an armed insurrection at the U.S. Capitol is repulsive. And I'm proud of Stuart. Stuart knows that. And Stuart, I'm honored that you would join us here today. And we got a good crowd in here. And Stu, I'm just going to kind of shut up a little bit, which is hard for me to do. And just tell us your story, Stuart. What the heck happened? Hey, Stuart, how many days did you serve in lockup?
Well, I did a total of 3 years in prison.
3 years?
Folks, a year and over a year and a half, just over a year and a half in solitary. And you know, guys like Joe Biggs did over 2 years in solitary. So they were trying to break us and get us all to plead guilty, we did not do. And then also trying to get us to turn on President Trump, and we refused and went to trial. Yeah.
So tell us a story here, Stuart. Just take some time. A lot of these people have never really heard the story.
So
what the setup it was.
You bet. So we were there doing volunteer security on J6 for two events that had permits to be on the Capitol grounds. One was Latinos for Trump. And the other was Ollie Alexander's event on the grass just outside the east side doors of the Capitol. That's where Roger Stone was keynote speaker. Marjorie Taylor Greene was going to speak. Josh Hawley, Louie Gohmert, other members of Congress were going to come out after they challenged the slates of electors from the swing states that were corrupted slates. They were going to come outside and talk to the crowds. So that was all planned even before President Trump decided to do his rally down on the ellipse. This is an important point, is that we were already going to be there, as we had been there in November and December, massive crowds of people protesting against what we knew was a stolen election, illegal and also unconstitutional. And so that's why we were there again on January the 6th. And then President Trump announced his ellipse rally. And so we had people that were, you know, keynote speakers for the Ollie Alexander event, went down to President Trump's ellipse rally. And so our security teams went with them, were in the VIP section, and escorted them from President Trump's rally back up to the Capitol where they were going to be. So what I think the best way to look at J6 is this. It's a righteous protest against an openly stolen election, called the COVID coup. They pulled a coup in 2020 using COVID as their mechanism for stealing the election. And we were there to protest against that. And then they said, okay, the pattern was November, December, they saw huge crowds down by Freedom Plaza, march up to the Capitol, fill the grass for additional events all around the Capitol, permitted events, speakers on the Supreme Court steps, for example. Like we had, General Flynn speaking there in December. We were part of his security detail. So I think the bad guys saw that pattern. Oh, they're going to go from down by the White House, and they're going to march up to the Capitol. They already know his permits pulled. I believe it was a 7 or 8 permitted events all around the Capitol on J6. So they saw that same pattern, and they thought to themselves, how do we manipulate that? Well, 2-3 ways, really. Make sure people go inside, A. B, make sure that people fight with the police. And how do you do that? How do you get Trump supporters who are like 98% pro-law enforcement, overwhelmingly pro-cop? Right. How do you get them to fight cops? Use excessive force, like the killing of Ashley Babbitt, Michael Byrd, Capitol Police officer who murdered her, shot an unarmed woman in the face, Air Force veteran. Roseanne Boylan laying unconscious, being hit in the head with a club by another Capitol Police officer, a black female, just beating her when she's unconscious. That's how you get Trump supporters to fight the police, use excessive force. So I believe there were dual hatters, I call them, in D.C. Metro and Capitol Police working for the CIA/FBI who made sure that they use excessive force. They're given a green light to use what would be unlawful excessive force without any consequences to agitate the men in the crowd. That's how you get Trump supporters to fight the cops. So I believe that was done. And they also had provocateurs in the crowd. We now know, they lied up front and told us there were no FBI agents in the crowd. We now know there were at least 274 FBI agents in the crowd. That was disclosed by a member of Congress, not by Kash Patel. And just so you understand how bad things are under Kash Patel, when that was finally disclosed that, yes, in fact, there were 274 undercover agents in the crowd, FBI agents, Kash Patel explained that away by saying, oh, they were improperly used for crowd control that day. That's his excuse. Not to be provocateurs. So I think Kash Patel is now part of the problem. He's covering.
Well, Stuart, it would have been easy for Kash to say should have said right at the beginning, oh, yes, they were there, but they were for crowd control. That would have been the way they should have put it out there. Right?
They never did that. Only when a member of Congress disclosed that there were 274 FBI agents in the crowd undercover, then Kash Patel comes out and says, oh, they were there for crowd control. And James Baker, who was seeing all the video, he called that. I mean, he said, that's, 100% bull, is what he said. That I've seen all the video. I see no evidence of any FBI agent being used for crowd control. That's just another deep state spin.
So, and Stuart, the whole thing with Ray Epps, we all remember that Ray Epps story. He certainly was an insider, wasn't he, Stuart, out there?
And I would say beyond a doubt. And the reason why I know that is because of the way he was protected. Like in my trial, we were there for security. I didn't even go inside. Some of the Oath Keepers did go inside, but when they were inside, they helped police multiple times. And in our trial, we wanted to show the jury the video of Ray Epps on the night of the 5th, where he's on camera saying, tomorrow we got to go inside the Capitol. Yeah. And we wanted to show video of him on J6, urging people forward at the Capitol, whispering in Ryan Samsel's ear before he pushed over the first barricade. None of that was allowed to be shown to the jury. We were not allowed. In fact, we were told we couldn't even mention his name. We couldn't call the witness.
Judge made a ruling on that, Spencer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And said, you can't. Judge Mehta, the judge, American, is an Indian, dot, not feather, Indian immigrant judge appointed by Obama. He ruled that we couldn't even mention Ray Epps' name to the jury. They couldn't see the footage. We couldn't talk about him. We couldn't call him as a witness. So, and the same thing happened to the J6 Select Committee. When they had their public show trial in Congress of Oath Keepers and Proud Boys to demonize us ahead of the trial, they also deleted Ray Epps out of all the footage, never showed him. So you would think, and he had been an Arizona Oath Keeper chapter leader back in 2010. That's when
Is that
he was
right?
On. Yeah, he was, yeah. So you'd think, and why would they care about that, right? If they would still use it. You would think he'd be sitting next to me at trial. He got a guy on camera doing what I was accused of doing, urging the crowd to go inside the Capitol. They never had any evidence of me doing that, but they had evidence of him doing that. So you'd think that he'd be sitting next to me at trial. But nope, he was completely protected. So yeah, I think he's a friggin' obvious Fed. And I don't care if he wants to sue me for defamation. Go ahead, Ray. Let's go to discovery on that. Go
right ahead. Hey, Stuart's, by the way, Stuart's a lawyer and some hill jack fell off back of a turn. What turn up?
I'm a recovering lawyer.
You have a law degree. At least that's true. So Stuart, as you look back over your shoulder at this whole mess, and it's, That's a long time ago, really. It's a long time ago that happened. What do you think? What was their goal, Stuart? What were they trying to do?
Well, distract you from what they had done. It's classic projection. They accused us of an insurrection when they were an open insurrection all through 2020, all across the country. And that was also part of the stealing of the election, I believe. Because the rumor, it's not a rumor, an insider in the U.S. Supreme Court, because let me back up a second. So Ken Paxton, our attorney general here from Texas, sued Pennsylvania on behalf of Texas that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court had violated the Constitution, because Article 2 of the Constitution says that it is the, when it comes to presidential elections, the state legislatures determine for the manner for selecting electors. And state legislatures all passed election laws to do that. Those were all violated in 2020 under the excuse of COVID. So that's why Texas sued Pennsylvania and said, hey, you need to follow the law passed by the legislature of Pennsylvania. The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania can't just do whatever they want. Then 20 other states joined a lawsuit. That should have been the case that settled the controversy of the 2020 election. Just like in 2000 when Bush v. Gore was settled by the Supreme Court of the United States. Bush v. Gore, the Supreme Court did his job. In 2020, in sharp contrast, everybody on the Supreme Court, except for Alito and Thomas, all sat on their hands. Roberts, Barrett, and Kavanaugh joined the lefties and refused to hear the case. That's what threw us into a constitutional crisis. And what the insider in the Supreme Court said is that in session, when they were talking about this, debating about this case, Roberts screamed at Alito and Thomas and said, what do you want? If we do this and give this to Trump, they will burn down our cities. That's what Roberts is rumored to have screamed. So I think all the open insurrection all across the country played a role in shutting Roberts' mouth and Barrett and Kavanaugh. They just completely wimped out because of that threat. That's part of it. But the other part of it was an open conspiracy across the country to directly violate election laws all over the country, in the swing states in particular, to give the election to Biden, to steal
so,
it.
So, Stuart, look, the First Amendment of the Constitution gives you the right to peaceably assemble to petition your government for a redress of grievances.
No, it doesn't give us that right. It protects that right.
It protects that right. Thank you. It protects that right. So
our rights come from God. Yeah.
They had to make sure it wasn't peaceful, didn't they, Stu?
Well, it was peaceful. That's what's, I mean, yeah, to borrow a phrase from the left, it was a mostly peaceful protest. I was on the east side. I saw no fighting with the police. The only fighting with the cops happened on the west side that I could see. Like I said, I think it's because they use excessive force. Like I know other veterans, like Rob Moores, another good Army Ranger veteran, goes by the name Lego Man. We were in prison together for a while, but you know, he said the reason why he kicked into action is he saw them shooting canisters of tear gas right in the middle of women and children, intentionally, like tear gassing women and kids to piss off the men. That's why they did it.
Yeah, that's why they did it. Yeah. So Stuart, look, two things. Number one, tell us, Stuart, what is it that you did and what is it they accused you of? Accused you to the point that you spent 3 years in jail. You didn't receive a pardon from President Trump, although he made a blanket pardon. Supposedly, you haven't been pardoned, right?
Right. Let me tell you about that. So,
what is it they claimed you did, Stuart?
Well, the charge was seditious conspiracy. And that's what they used. The only people out of 1,500 people that were charged for J6, only Oath Keepers or Proud Boys were charged with seditious conspiracy. And they used that to try to create, it was all about creating a false narrative that President Trump was in a conspiracy with Oath Keepers and Proud Boys. That's what they said. In fact, Benny Thompson, member of Congress from Mississippi, who went on the chair of the so-called J6 Select Committee, he filed a lawsuit with other members of Congress back on February 16th, 2021. Just weeks after J6 happened, alleging a conspiracy between Trump, Giuliani, Oath Keepers, and Proud Boys to disenfranchise black voters by attacking democracy. That was the argument, that we violated the KKK Act. We were trying to you know, keep black people from being able to vote. That's the whole big, huge smear. But that's how early this narrative was set. So I'm just bringing that up. February 16, 2021, the narrative was already set. This is what they said in his first impeachment too, right? From that. They said, oh, President Trump, you know, directed this attack. So it was all about the false narratives. All of our prosecutions was meant to make that true by coercing us into fake confessions. That's why they put us all in solitary confinement. And they threatened us all with life in prison. We all got the same letter that said that you've been charged with seditious conspiracy. This is the same as treason, so therefore we're going to ask the judge for life in prison. We all told them to go pound sand. But there were two guys, two oath keepers, who did take the deal, agreed to sign a confession for seditious conspiracy, and also signed a statement of lies against me saying that I told them to go inside. Those two guys who completely pussed out, pardon my language, they got no prison time. Judge Meadow, the same one who gave me 18 years, gave them probation only. And then when President Trump came into office on January 20, 2025, they got pardons. So,
But you haven't yet.
There's eight oath keepers left. There's 12 of us total that have received commutations, not pardons. Eight oath keepers and four Proud Boys. And we're all the ones who went to trial and refused to take a deal. The ones that took a deal got pardons. Oh, so someone in Trump's circle, sadly, somebody in President Trump's circle is a bad actor who wants that false narrative to live on. Because we're still actually co-defendants with President Trump in those two active lawsuits. That one by Benny Thompson, members of Congress, is still active in front of Judge Mehta right now, to this day. It's still going on right now. We're in discovery still. And another one was filed by a group of Capitol Police officers. Same argument that Trump led a conspiracy with Oath Keepers and Proud Boys. So here's the bad news, is that those are still two live cases with him as a co-defendant for myself, Enrique Tarrio, and other Oath Keepers and Proud Boys. I believe someone in his own circle is making sure that we're not pardoned so they can make the argument that, hey, there really was a conspiracy, and they could impeach him. If they take the House and Senate, they could impeach him based on that, make the same arguments again, and impeach President Trump and remove him from power. So that's the risk he's in right now. That's the problem.
So, Stuart, so when you went into the courtroom, what is it? I mean, dude, I was there. I saw the chaos. I saw everything that was going on. What is it they said you did, Stuart?
Oh, they said that I planned and told my men to enter the Capitol, and that was our grand plan, was to walk around inside and help police and then walk out. But the argument at the end, you know, they said, oh, we conspired with the Proud Boys and, you know, we're all together in this plan to attack the Capitol. But at the end of it all, they told the jury their mere presence inside the Capitol delayed the reconvening of Congress. So that caused a delay, and that's why it was interference with official proceeding. And the only conspiracy they could point to was my free speech, calling out the election as stolen, urging President Trump to invoke the Insurrection Act and to use his power of declassification. I wrote open letters to him urging him to use those powers, which I think he should still do to this day. He can use that to take the deep state down. But they use all that free speech as their evidence of a conspiracy. So I believe the jury in the end just put me in prison because of my free speech, period.
But if I understand it right, Stu, you weren't really allowed to make a defense, were you?
Oh, yeah, sure. I took the stand. I just told them the truth about the election being stolen. I told them we were there to do security. They don't care. It's a D.C. jury, brother. You're going to be found guilty. They could, you know, the old saying is that, you know, a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich because all they hear is lies. Well, the same goes for a D.C. jury. They'll indict a Trump hat. And none of us, we all did motions for change of venue, trying to move the trial outside of D.C. because obviously the D.C. juries are, you know, hopelessly corrupt. Every one of those motions was denied. They did not want anyone to get a trial outside of D.C. because they didn't want Trump to get a trial outside of D.C. when they put him on trial. Their ultimate goal is to put him on trial.
Yeah, in D.C. Stuart, let me reel the fish in here a little bit. Let's go back a little bit. When did you start Oath Keepers, and what prompted you to do that? Go ahead.
Yeah, 2009. What prompted me to do that was I had worked for Ron Paul in his congressional office in 98, 99. I mean, he ran in 2008. I worked on the campaign in Nevada. That's where I was living back then. And I was on the Central Committee. I was on the Clark County Central Committee. And then I was a delegate to the state convention. I watched them steal the nomination from Ron Paul. I watched the corrupt uniparty inside the GOP steal it from him. I think he would have beaten Obama. I think he's the only one that could have. John McCain couldn't beat Obama. He didn't beat Obama.
They didn't want him to.
But they stopped Ron Paul, just like the corrupt politicians on both sides stop anyone, you know, they can, if that's a patriot. It's just the way it is. And that's when I realized we were, you know, if the system was FUBAR, you know, it's a broken system. So legal system broken. I saw that. I clerked for Arizona Supreme Court after Yale Law School, and I saw the corruption firsthand right there in the Arizona Supreme Court. But I saw it when I worked as a trial attorney in Montana. He's just right down to the local level. So I lost faith in our legal system. And then after Ron Paul had the nomination stolen from him in 2008 for the Republican Party, I lost faith in our political system. And I was like, okay, I got to focus on the men with the guns, the ones that be given orders to violate our rights. So I focused on military and police. That's why I started Oath Keepers.
So what was it then, Stuart, up to this point? What was it Oath Keepers did? By the way, folks, I'm going to open it up and let you ask Stuart some questions here in a minute. What was, when you got them together, you had a lot of them. It was a great organization. They did everything they could to destroy it. Yeah. What were some of the things that you guys did, Stuart?
Well, out of the gate, we gathered on Lexington Green and renewed our oaths there. So that was the first thing we did. We were following in the footsteps of the founding generation. So during the Adams administration, you know that famous quote from John Adams that our Constitution was meant for a
moral and religious people?
Yes.
Holy and adequate for the government of any other?
Yeah. Yep. You know where that came from?
No.
It came from his response as President of the United States to a letter, a proclamation from veterans.
Is that
veterans
right?
From the Revolutionary War gathered during the Adams administration. They gathered on Lexington Green. Some of them had fought there on Lexington Green. And they were there with their sons who were now in the militia. And so they took and they renewed their oaths to support and defend the U.S. Constitution on Lexington Green, and then sent the proclamation to the President of the United States, John Adams, about what they had done and why. So his response was that famous quote. That's where it comes from, his response. Well, we did that. We just followed their footsteps. We went there and said, look, we're going to make sure that everyone understands that our oath is to the Constitution of the United States, not to any man, not to the president. It's to the Constitution. Because at the time, it was Obama as president. And because we did that during the Obama administration, of course, we were accused of being racist and all kinds of nonsense by Southern Poverty Law Center and ADL, too. They both jumped all over us.
Yeah.
But all we were saying is we're loyal to the Constitution. We want everyone in military service, everyone in police also, to think about the orders being given. Like Katrina was a big wake-up call. You had police officers brought from all over the country to help who ended up obeying unconstitutional orders to confiscate guns, go house to house, because the mayor of New Orleans was anti-gun, and so was the police chief. And sadly, they obeyed those orders. Most of them did. Very few said no. So it was a big wake-up call. So we used that as a teaching moment. It's like, hey, guys, we need to take the Constitution seriously. So that's when I started. And yes, Paul's right. COVID was also a massive wake-up call. You saw cops. I was here in Texas. You saw police officers all over the country, including right here in Texas, that were obeying unconstitutional, illegal orders to shut down businesses and coerce people under the name of COVID. Yeah. Sad but true. So the mission of Oath Keepers was to remind everybody of their oath and try to get more of them to start thinking hard about where the lines are, yes or no.
So, Stuart, a lot of people think, you know, President Trump came in, pardoned a lot of people, yada, yada, yada. But you didn't get one. Why did you get one, Stuart?
Well, I don't know, but I think, look, I'm grateful to President Trump for setting me free. I was very happy that night. Still the best night of my life in many ways.
I bet.
But we've been, you know, we lost our, but seven of us are veterans. Being, you know, Joe Biggs, Dominic Pozzolo's Marine Corps. Joe Biggs was 82nd Airborne. Zach Reel, also Marine. Kenny Harrelson, my co-defendants, Army. Jessica Watkins, Army. So, you know, seven of us have lost our military veterans benefits.
You don't get your military benefits? You don't?
No. No, we all got a letter from the VA. I was still in solitary after being convicted. And it said, because you've been convicted of seditious conspiracy, this is the same as treason. So therefore, you've lost all your military benefits, nothing. I got a spinal fusion from my parachuting accident. So in the Army. So
How'd you lose your eyes, Stuart?
That's civilian life. That's different. But okay. My back was broken in a parachuting accident, doing rough terrain parachuting in the Army. I was part of a long-range reconnaissance unit. Army Airborne Reconnaissance Unit. But anyway, so I was a service-connected disabled vet. And so is Joe Biggs and a bunch of other guys. But the letter said you've lost all your benefits and you can no longer be buried in a veteran cemetery. It's like the ultimate slap in the face to a veteran.
Oh,
so that's what they did to us. Yeah. So I want to say something about how I got through all that. I want to say this. Number one, my faith. You're not going to get through that without strong faith. If you don't have strong faith, you're going to wind up dishonoring yourself and breaking probably. So I kept in mind, foremost in mind, the story of Joseph, that what man means for evil, God could use for good. I kept that in mind. Mm. I also kept in mind, of course, the prohibition of the Ten Commandments against bearing false witness. I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm never going to do that. And second thing was, as a veteran, I saw myself as a POW of the domestic enemies. And just as I would not betray my country by cooperating with the enemy if I was captured in war against a foreign enemy, I will not aid the domestic enemies of our Constitution. I consider them even worse than foreign enemies. And so there's no way I'd rather be dead than aid or assist them in what they're doing to our country.
Were you betrayed, Stuart? Were you betrayed? Somebody close to you betray you?
Oh, yeah. Those two guys that took the deal absolutely stabbed me in the back. And then also, there was one other man in our leadership. I think I'm still under a gag order. I can't say his name. But the New York Times outed him. So you can go look up New York Times paid informant inside of Oath Keepers. We found out at our trial. I was going to call this guy as a witness, as one of our key witnesses, because he was high up my leadership and knew exactly that we were not there to do anything on J6 except security. And we're getting ready to call this guy as a witness. And then the prosecution's like, oh, actually, he works for us. So come to find out, August 2020, yes, being paid. My lawyer said he's being paid like $6,000 a month to turn on us and inform on us. So yeah, another stab in the back from somebody close to me. So yeah, it's just human, it's human nature. Christ was betrayed too, right?
That's right. That's so, right.
I mean, it's just human nature, brother. You know, Stuart, he was hit not only with Judas, but also at his trial in front of Pilate. There are false witnesses brought forward, right? They're paid the Sadducees. They were paid to bear false witness. So same thing happened. Nothing new under the sun. That's okay. I think it's okay in this sense that what man means for evil, God means for good. So I think everything they threw at President Trump, that's why I got a tattoo of my arm. I got him on my arm. I got this tattoo. I don't know if you can see that, but this is my Trump tattoo I got. I think you guys can see that. But I got that in prison of him with his fist raised after Butler, and it says fight. Because I saw that as the moment that God saved his life for a reason, and the reason is to take down the deep state here at home. Yeah, that's what I believe he's there to do.
So, Stuart, why didn't you get a pardon, Stuart?
Well, I believe that someone in his circle, that's why there's still 8 Oath Keepers and 4 Proud Boys that didn't get pardons. I think they want that false narrative to live on. They want to be able to say, see? In fact, they've even said that. I was with Ivan Reichman in D.C. watching the first pipe bomber hearing that they had, and you had Jimmy Raskin pointing me out in the crowd and going, he didn't get a pardon. Why is he here? You know, they're making a big deal out of that I didn't get a pardon. So I think there's someone in Trump's inner circle that wants that false narrative to live on. There's still those two cases where we're co-defendants. They want that to have teeth. They don't want us to get a pardon. They don't want us to have any, influence, I think, in the MAGA movement. They want everyone to run away from us.
Stuart, how long did you serve in the military?
I was only in for one term, had my accident and got out. I was finally released in 89, but my accident was in 86. I went in 83. So 3 years that I had my accident, it took time for them to out-process me.
And your education is what, Stuart?
I went to college at UNLV. That's where I was growing up in Las Vegas. And then I went to Yale Law School.
Yale Law School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then while I was there, I also helped teach military history to the undergrads. That was a lot of fun. So.
And they will not, folks, understand this. They will not grant him a pardon. He can't get his military, can't go to the VA, can't get his VA benefits. They have stripped him of everything.
Well, we hope to get a pardon. In fact, 4 of us went to Mar-a-Lago at the invitation of the local GOP chair there, hoping to meet President Trump. I think if I talked to him for like even a minute and showed his tattoo and just said, hey, we were loyal to you, I think he values loyalty. You know, we're still loyal to him and to the country, but my loyalty under my oath requires me to speak out when he's doing something wrong.
Yeah, we don't know who's got his ear, do we, Stuart? That's part of the problem.
We know bad people got his ear. I can tell you a few of them. I think Susie Wiles. I think Todd Blanche. I think now Cash Patel and Bongino. I think they're are just, you know, not only covering for the deep state, but frankly traitors to our country now. I can explain why I think that if you want. But
well, you know, clearly something amiss with Bongino, right? So he certainly got in there, saw everything that was going on, and for whatever reason walked away from it. Now we all can imagine what that might be, right? Maybe they threatened his family. Who knows? But the reality is he saw and knew what was going on there.
All I know is this. He raised his right hand when he became the deputy FBI director and swore the same oath we all did to defend the Constitution against all his foreign and domestic. I don't want to hear any excuses for why he's not doing his job. When he was deputy director, here's the big thing that I don't like that they did. They framed an innocent man, Brian Cole, police officer. What's her name? Shawnee Kirk Kaufman, whatever her name is. So I think she is the actual pipe bomber. And only because they were starting to get on her trail did they pull this guy out of the file of patsies. That's what I believe. That was done by Cash Patel, Bongino, Bondi, Blanche, and Judge Jeanine. They're all taking part in this framing of an innocent man. So they crossed the line from just sitting on their hands and not doing what they should be doing to actively covering. That was a false flag on J6. The whole pipe bomber thing was done by the CIA, by the deep state, FBI, CIA. What's the difference? I believe that was part of the setup. But they want to make sure that pipe bomb was a threat to help shut down Congress. So,
Stuart, let's let some folks got some questions for you here. Let's get into them. Betty, sure. Come in, and then Paul. Go ahead, Betty.
Betty, sorry. You're a hero, Stuart. You know,
I don't want to say that. I did my job.
Well, you did, but you know, a lot of people wouldn't have survived that, what you did. So
only by the grace of God, man. Only by the grace
of God. Amen. And those backstabbers, you know, money talks, you know, so it's sad that they'll go against their own.
So Betty, I think more than money, I think it's probably threats to their family, sure, to their safety.
Yeah. Hey, I've got six kids. I've got a family. So I don't have any, I'm not going to give any leeway to people that submit like that.
I get you. Go ahead, Betty. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Your show.
I interrupt for a living anyway, don't I?
Yeah. I was just wondering, are you still trying to get a pardon? And if you are, what can we do to help you out? Can we send letters or what can we do to help you out? And if you did get pardoned, would you get your VA benefits back?
Yes. Joe Biggs has talked to the new director of the VA. And what he got back from that conversation was they can't do anything until we're pardoned. Still, like seven of us that are veterans. So yeah, a total of 8 Oath Keepers and 4 Proud Boys, total of 12, still need pardons. So yes, we've got pardon applications in, and of course, President Trump could pardon us.
Speculation only, but why haven't they pardoned you think?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I think there's someone in his circle that wants that false narrative to live on. Yeah. So, I mean, what we hear through the grapevine is Todd Blanche is blocking Ed Martin from doing his job. Ed Martin is the pardon attorney. I think he's on our side, but Todd Blanche is his boss. He just does what he wants. Wow. I think Todd Blanche is you know, obviously a deep stater in charge of running the clock out on Trump.
Yeah. Dr. Paul, come on in.
So, yeah, what you can do, there's a letter campaign. I think it's pardonthe14.com. I believe that you can send in letters to the White House. And
pardonthe14.com.
It certainly can't hurt. Like, certainly can't hurt. Yeah.
Pardonthe14.com. Okay. We'll get Spencer will get that up there for us. Get into
there. It is. Yeah. There's still 12 of us left, but that's okay.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Zach,
Dr. Paul.
There's a bunch of good there. Yeah.
Hey, Stuart. I've been a long time waiting to talk to this man.
Hey, Paul.
Do you know Stephen Metcalf at all?
No,
is that my attorney? No. Okay. Well, he's actually got some of the marginal guys that were in prison because of this. He's taking care of him. He's out of Manhattan, New York. I was blessed to get him, right? But my take on all this and have been in jail after. I'm sorry.
Are you a J6er, Paul?
Oh, believe me. I had my own fight.
He's got a story.
I had my own fight.
No problem.
You know, I have two sisters and three sisters and a brother-in-law that were J5ers. They all ended up in jail after a riot there. But the FBI were in my office because I was treating COVID and keeping people from being vaccinated. And I was actually the first in the country to have my license canceled because of that, my medical license.
Oh, wow.
And I did get it back. But then, you know, roughly 2 years later, I was shot in the street by the police with a 12-gauge slug because they thought I had a gun.
Wow.
So my take in all this is that judges have far too immunity, absolute immunity. I don't know if I think you probably agree with this because they can do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, my judge left me for dead for 95 minutes after I was shot because he was the EMT in this town in New York. And he just recused himself 16 months down the road. This was about 2 months ago. So, I mean, it's bizarre. But during this period of time when you guys were fooling around in Washington, I had the FBI in my office.
Yeah. Well, right? I'm not surprised. This is the frustrating.
Homeland Security. Yeah. It's crazy, man.
Well, but I'll tell you what. So all those FBI. I'm going to say this. I'll bet you all the FBI agents that came after you are still on the job. I'm going to bet money.
Yeah. You know. I'm also a military guy. I'm a Marine corpsman, so that's what I'm most proud of, not becoming a doctor. Well, Navy corpsman, Marine corpsman, it's pretty much the same thing.
I'll connect you two guys, Stuart. You have to talk. You have to talk to Dr.
Yeah, that's hey, Paul, anyway. you went through the same. It's the same thing. It's a lawfare, and yes, it was done in 2020 to anybody that resisted with COVID. And so hats off to you for being, you know, tip of the spear on that.
Amen.
As part of the fight. Yeah.
I saw COVID as being a DOD thing. You know, it was taken in by the DOD. I saw it firsthand. And, you know, my military friends and so forth were involved with all that. But, I mean, you just can't follow orders. Stuart,
right.
I mean, you got to ask questions, and I get where you're at, but I'll tell you what, 4 months in jail after I was obliterated by that 12-gauge shotgun in the street.
How'd you survive a slug? Do you have body armor on?
No, I was in the street just driving. Coach, I'll tell you,
we have video of it, Stu. We have video. Wow. It's unbelievable. Yeah, they thought he had a gun and shot a slug at him, deer slug. Guy ought to be dead.
They thought he had a gun, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but then they accused me of attempted murder on a peace officer, right? And that was the game, and that's how it played out. And I was just driving around. I was legitimately kind of sick because I had been driving for 36 hours. But the point is, I don't trust the justice system any more than I trust the healthcare.
And that's the brutal reality. And COVID showed this. You have, this is sad to say, but true. You have police officers all over the country that will do whatever it takes to save their job. And that includes doing things like they did to you.
Yeah.
Like,
unethical things.
Yeah. No, he was definitely called in to take me out. And worse than about
Lavoie Finicum. Absolutely. He was murdered.
So Stuart, I can vouch for Dr. Paul. I mean, this ain't some kook.
Yeah, hey, please connect us. I don't want to steal the show in any way, but I'm starting my own podcast. I'd love to interview you. That'd be fantastic. So, yeah.
I'll connect you guys.
Yeah, cool.
I'll connect you.
But anyway, I got close, very close to God in all this. And, I know what you know what I'm talking about.
Have to.
And I'm not afraid of going out, but I think the truth is there are a lot of people out there, including Trump, that have guns to their heads or guns to their loved ones' heads.
Maybe. But once again, Once again, I would say this. I'll say the same thing, that they should go walk through the cemetery in Arlington, look at all those headstones, all those young men who died at a very young age. And I don't care whether it's a threat, whether it's blackmail, or whether it's bribery. I don't care what they do to make people do, you know, dishonor their oaths. I don't care. Their oath is to the Constitution. They have a responsibility and duty to defend it no matter what the cost, period. Yeah. So I don't want to hear
Would my family be more important?
Yeah.
Right?
What's that?
That's true. If a threat on your family would be far more important. That would be something.
Well, even with the threat on my family, if we don't defeat the deep state and take them down, then your family, my children, your children will not have freedom.
That's right.
Will not have life and liberty and pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. So even if they threaten my family, I would just blow the whistle on that and still keep fighting on. And leave my family in God's hands. That's how I feel about that.
Amen. Let me get Dave Allison in here. Let me get Dave in here if I can. Come on in, Dave.
Yeah, Stuart, it's a pleasure and honor to be able to talk with you. And I appreciate the fact you've maintained your integrity, your character, and your humility, right, brother, through all this. You're a great testimony for the power of our Lord Jesus Christ. Stuart, what I'm struggling with right now, and I've heard part of your story, and we have a friend in our group, Bill Dumphy, that's went through similar things. The thing that really frustrates me and this is what really bothers me, is that the president today, we've heard that the American government gave the citizens in Iran, and I heard a commentary from a guy who's close to what's going on in Iran. He said there was a large percentage of people that were unhappy with the government. So
I believe that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that, and I believe that. He said that was true. But he said the American government gave the citizens guns to support the uprising. And what they did is you just became cannon fodder. There wasn't 45,000. He said there was anywhere between 3,000 and 4,000 people that were shot. And that's still a lot of people. He said a couple hundred police officers also lost their lives. But the citizens became the cannon fodder. They became that narrative that the government needed to whip up the emotions in the United States to show the people how evil the government was. And what I see here is a pattern that the government they don't care who it is and what they have to do to get their narrative. And as you said, and I agree 100%, you were just became cannon fodder for a narrative, the FBI, whoever they needed, so they could come against you and come against the president. They seen that the COVID thing wasn't even working, right? They pulled out all the stops. But what really bothers me is the president today, he's proud of the fact that they gave him the guns to try to resist the government. But God forbid that you just go there and stand up and speak the truth, you're thrown in jail. I'm sorry, Stuart. I appreciate your confidence you have in the president. I've lost a lot of respect for him in this last week or last month or so. And I feel bad. I've supported him wholeheartedly up until this point. Thanks.
Yeah, let me address that. So my feeling on the Iran war is that just like COVID was used to derail President Trump and take him down, it's the same strategy. They're using the war to distract him and then run the clock out. So that, and I'll say this, I think we need regime change right here at home. This is the most important regime change, because whatever happens with Iran, whether it's a good or bad outcome, the deep state is happy to have him distracted with foreign policy, because he's not looking at them anymore. Amen. And that's where he needs to look. And they're going to, when they come back into power, if we don't defeat them now while President Trump is the president, we don't take them down, they're going to come back into power and it's going to be like exponentially worse for everyone. They're going to keep on going after the political right, but now it'll be no breaks. They just realize, like, all those FBI agents that persecuted all of us, J6ers, guys like Paul, over COVID, over, you know, boys and girls locker rooms, all of that persecution against the anti-abortion protesters, all of that's going to come roaring back, and all those agents are still on the job. And now they'll be like, hey, we got no downside. No one's ever going to hold us to account, because even when a Republican gets in, they don't fire us. They'll be right back at it again. And same goes with all those prosecutors. So this is what I say. We need regime change here at home.
It's a devil loose, man.
Yeah. But I do know. I know people that know people in Iran, and there are legitimate people in Iran that do not want to live under the mullahs. I hear some people on our side are like, oh, that's all fake. It's all CIA, you know, AstroTurf. There's no real resistance in Iran. It's not true. I've watched over the years, decades now, of Iranians, you know, protesting and being murdered by their own government. Yeah. So I'll say this. I'm glad the mullah is dead. They killed Khomeini. I was happy because he's an evil bastard. Amen. And so I'm in the middle on this. I think it was appropriate to prevent them from getting the ability to build nukes. I don't trust them. Like I think Joe Kent's a hero and for speaking the truth under his, you know, perception of what the reality is on the ground. I think he's a good man. But I disagree with him about, he says, oh, there was a fatwa by the supreme leader against building nukes. I don't believe that was anything sincere. Yeah. I think they were trying to build nukes. So I'm glad they got that taken care of. I'm glad he was killed, but I don't want to see us invade and occupy Iran like another Iraq. Amen. I think the best way to do that is to support the people in rebelling against their own government and use special forces to do that and then maybe air cover. But it should be focused on the Iranian people. I think it's a mistake, though, to target their power plants, and that'll turn the average Iranian against the United States. So I think I'm in the middle on this. I think unfortunately, the bad guys that control our foreign policy and control our government are not going to do this in the right way. They're going to do it in a messed up way. Like killing an entire school full of little girls was a massive, horrible thing to have happen. And I think that's part of the setup. They don't want the Iranian people on our side because they want to make it a mess. That's what I think.
That's a deep state. Tom Munns, come on in. Tom, you got to unmute yourself.
It's a mess. It's going to be a mess until you clean out the CIA and the State Department of all these holdovers that are deep staters. It's going to be a mess by intention, by design.
By design. Go ahead, Tom.
God bless you, everyone. Good to see you, Stuart. And I'm from greetings from.
Is it good to see me, Tom? Isn't it good to see me?
So definitely, but you already knew that already. I don't get a chance to Stuart that much, so I thought I'd ride your coattail.
What's up, Tom?
Greetings from Idaho. And
hey, there you go.
People pretty well love you out here. I'm out here
from the American readout, right?
Yeah, damn right, for sure, man. It's Lavoie-Finicum country here, just 30 miles north. Yeah. I got to tell you, I began with Coach. Probably he started me. He lit my firecracker, and the thing's been lit ever since. But I think it's been 20 years now. And one of the things I had learned when I started, I began in Christian apologetics, and I studied scripture and I followed him, and I was on the hot seat with, you know, a couple of those guys. Coach remembers that. And long story short, you know, it seemed that the Lord took me into a bit of a different direction, but I learned a lot along the way. And one of the things I learned about is the importance of having Christian apologetics, which was something I like to do. Trying to refute inconsistencies and arbitrariness. And although those are more apologetic terms, and I'm kind of relatively new to it, and I love it, what I'm starting to see is absolute hypocrisy among my brethren, my political, patriotic brethren, my Christian brethren. Ignorance is raising. People no longer talk about facts. They no longer talk consistency about law. They're all over the board. People start using words like deep state, and then people can't define what deep state is. And how are you going to fight an enemy? I think Sun Tzu is pretty clear about that. If you don't know who your enemy is, right, and you don't know who you are, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So. Right. That's the first question. The other one.
I'm curious. So, what are you like? What's the big hypocrisy you're seeing right now?
Well, the big hypocrisy I'm seeing, and with all due respect intended, I tend to agitate the morning airwaves here in the Boise area. Excuse me. But the big thing is for me is, you know, we talk about love for God. We talk about the fact that we have a divine constitution, but yet somehow. We think that somehow we should be able to elevate Trump to a degree where he doesn't have to, where a declaration of war is not necessary. Now, it's important for us to realize where this motivation comes from. And I don't mind saying it because other people are going to get really offended. And I guess that's just too bad.
No, go ahead.
But I'm starting to look at, you know, I'm looking at the influence of the Israeli government. I'm looking at the Zionist movement that has taken over America with the Zionist Congress a long time ago. Mm-hmm. He openly mentions the fact that he supports Israel. He said that Bibi Netanyahu was this greatest man ever on the planet. You know, it's every single movie that you watch on TV is plagued with some guy with, you know, proselytizing for some, you know, as, you know, this movement.
Let me go ahead and just give you my thoughts on that.
Yeah, we got about 5 minutes left here, Stu.
Yeah, I just got kicked off of X. I got suspended on X. My last pinned post was me praying at the Alamo, and the post said, as a Texan, the only place, the only wall I'm going to kiss or pray at is at the Alamo. I'm an American Christian nationalist, and I'm loyal to this country, or like Lexington Green, or Faneuil Hall, or Independence Hall, because God's providence is on this country from its founding, and that's my focus, not a foreign country. So I'm with you on that. I think that the slavish commitment that Christians have, that they must support the nation state of Israel,
I mean,
because it's now a commandment in the Bible, I think they're missing the entire New Testament.
Well, here's what I say it regularly. I hate the Israeli government and I hate the American government. The people, that's something entirely different, right?
Absolutely. But I went to law school with dual citizen Israelis who were atheist, communist, who hated Christians, hated the West, hated our Constitution, wanted to destroy it, were absolutely loyal to Israel. That's the reality. That's a big part of their government are those kinds of people. That are you know, communist atheists. Then you got the Orthodox rabbis who also hate Christianity, believe Christ is boiling in excrement. So I'm just not going to shut my eyes. You got those two different prongs in Israel, in their government, and in their population. Now, I went to a Messianic synagogue in Texas of Christ-believing Jews are good people. They're Christians. So, you know, but I'm not going to shut my eyes to the reality in front of my face.
How do we justify, though, if I could, and sorry if I'm overstepping here, How do we explain to people that to disallow a foreign country to have nuclear weapons would be like saying, if that's true, then China should allow America not to be able to have nuclear weapons either. I mean, I think that our founding fathers were pretty clear about foreign entanglements. They were pretty clear about, you know, about the relationships that we should have with foreign countries. Right. And be buying into the deep state propaganda about going to war, just like we did with World War II. I mean, the UN and the global elitists have been behind every single war, I believe, since America was even thought of. And for us to be able to think somehow that we need, you know, we need Trump to go and obliterate a country, especially for the sake of another country, man, I got big issues. And so
let me just give a quick thought on that.
Hey. Okay. Hey, Stuart, listen, we got 2 minutes. Close it up here, and then let us know how we can help you, Stuart, okay? Got two you minutes, got brother.
Yeah, hey, we live in the House Thanks, of Mirrors. It's been, our foreign policy has been screwed for a long time. But, yeah, we should go back to congressional declarations of war. I agree. So the folks can support me, I believe, bottom up. Right now, locals where it's at, and so that's what I'm focused on, strong neighborhoods, strong churches, strong counties, and strong towns. So if you want to support my work, go to givesengo.com/oath. I definitely appreciate any support. I definitely need it. So, and I'll be starting the Strong County Project coming up. So we'll talk about some more about that. I'll be back on. I'll be happy to go into that. What we can do locally.
Folks, here, I want you to understand this. Stuart Rhodes is not getting his pension. He's not getting his pension. Do you understand that? Do you know what it's like to not have any money? And so, I would just encourage all of you. What's that website again? Where can they
go? Yeah, givesengo.com/oath, OATH.
Givesengo.com/oath. Let's help Stuart out, man. Huh?
/oath.
It's one thing to sit back and pat him on the back, tell him what a great job he's done. He can't get a freaking meal. I mean, he's not starving, but you understand what's going on, right?
Right.
And so when these guys get persecuted like that, it's our job, especially as the body of Christ, to step in and engage in what's going on. Stuart, right. So I appreciate you giving us the time. Tom, it's good to see you guys. Appreciate all of you joining in here. Here's what we have to understand, man. Huh? The only answer to the problems we find ourselves in is Jesus Christ. And those of us who are not ashamed of the gospel, our voices are needed now more than ever. Rob Pugh, thank you for letting me sit in. Wisconsin Christian News. Go. Good to see y'all. See you down the road here. God bless.
Thanks, Coach.